That's the theme from this year's Radio Theater. Tonight, a program of love and hate with Cicely Tyson as your hostess. Here's a preview.
Billy, I'm proud of you. I never thought you'd be able to pull it off.
Well, let's face it, Doris, I don't know if I have yet. Putting yourself into a drug rehab program for 6 months don't automatically reshape your skull.
Oh, come on. Why be so down on yourself?
The Sears Radio Theater will begin after this message from your local station.
This is Cicely Tyson. Our story is about a man who seemed incapable of doing right for doing wrong. There were people who called him a musical genius in the purest, most uncommercial sense in which the term can be understood. He was a deeply troubled human being who seemed, occasionally, to yearn for a harmonious life, but denied the possibility of ever achieving it by using drugs. Artificial escapes into false bottom utopias. This story is an attempt to show facets of the man that were never revealed to the public.
Listen to this. Listen to what Leo Leather wrote. On a scale of 1 to 10, ascending, we could easily credit Billy D. Burton, trumpet involuntary, man of 100 glycerine jazz tones, with a 0. Our column refers to Mr. Burton's concert of last evening at Philmont Hall. Everyone was there but Billy D. Burton himself. Why he wasn't there could not be clearly established from the 10th row, middle aisle. His band was there. His trumpet was there. Elements of his charismatic personality were there. But Billy D. Burton was not there, in the sense that we normally associate a performer with his performance. Leo Leather. Who the hell does he think he is?
Yeah, who does he think he is?
Ah, come on. Now, both of you know I was out of it last night.
Out of it? And that's the truth, Billy. You were out of it. And Leo Leather, one of the most influential jazz columnists in the country, caught you in your act.
I don't care what this guy says. You were...
Ah, shut up, Percy. You wouldn't know the truth if it beat you over the head.
Billy, you've got to pull yourself out of this dope bag. It's killing you. I don't think anyone would have any trouble reading between the lines in this column. You've got to pull out.
I know.
When, Billy? When?
Don't know. Soon, I guess. I don't know.
And that's only the beginning of our story.
A new adventure in radio listening. 5 nights of exceptional entertainment every week. Brought to you in Elliot Lewis' production of The Sears Radio Theater. Our story, Billy D. Burton, by Odie Hawkins. Our stars, Robert Dokey and Robin Braxton. The Sears Radio Theater is brought to you by Sears Roebuck and Company. Sears, where America shops for value.
Inevitably, we find ourselves looking backward as we rush forward, realizing that what happened before will occur again. Isn't that the formula for a legend?
Yeah, that ought to do it. I keep promising myself I'll get a new tape recorder, one of the fancier models that operate by remote control.
Well, that wouldn't be as much fun for you, would it?
I guess you have a point there, Mrs. Burton. Now then, shall we go on?
Oh, yes. I welcome the chance to tell the truth about my son.
And Jazzway Magazine welcomes the chance to print the truth. You were giving us a brief look at what Billy Burton was like as a boy.
Oh, he was the sweetest thing. He was the closest thing I've ever known to a perfectly behaved child. He was always ready to go to the store or lift something for me. Never any problem with fighting or any of the kind of stuff that boys normally do.
And as a boy, did he offer any evidence of being musically inclined?
Well, I can't really say that he showed any interest in music. Not really. But whenever he went over to Sadie's house...
Sadie?
My sister, Billy's aunt. Well, whenever he went over to visit, He just seemed to enjoy blowing on my brother-in-law's old trumpet from the high school band. Well, I'd be the last person in the world to say he was playing music.
When were you first made aware that Billy had an exceptional musical talent? Do you remember?
I remember it. I remember it distinctly. He turned 14 that summer, and I was sitting on the porch of the old house. You know, the one we had before he bought this one for me.
Yes?
I was just sitting there, took it out from a day's work, when I heard this sound. First thing I thought was someone has turned on the radio. Well, it was like it was Gabriel himself blowing that horn.
What happened when you discovered it was your son doing the blowing?
Well, I did what any mother would do. I offered him a chance to take music.
Did he take you up on your offer?
Well, for a little while, and he would have kept it up if it hadn't been for that low-life crowd down at Bootsy's.
Bootsy's, the neighborhood club where he first played professionally?
Oh, that's the place.
Now, you've called Bootsy's a low-life establishment. Would you please elaborate on that?
Well, that's what it was. A bunch of no-good rascals hanging around, just waiting to spread their evil ways.
This is the club where Billy was first introduced to hard drugs, isn't it?
Oh, no, that's not true. My son was never on dope.
14 years of documented evidence tells us that he was addicted to heroin, Mrs. Burton. Wasn't your son a bit young to be frequenting a nightclub?
Yes. He was 14 years old, but he was grown up looking. And besides, it didn't make much difference to the club owner. The owner was the mayor's nephew, and he could pretty much do what he wanted to, even to having a minor playing the trumpet in his club.
Mrs. Burton, if you could single out one event that you felt was the turning point in Billy's life, what would it be?
I'd say it was when that woman came into his life.
You're speaking of Ileana Stamatis.
Mm-hmm. Never could pronounce that woman's name. How do you say it?
Ileana Stamatis.
I was being introduced to my own country after a youth spent in Swiss schools, courtesy of my rags-to-riches immigré papa. Getting away from art classes at the Sorbonne, a brief fling at marriage and photography. I'm still interested in photography.
How old were you when you met Billy D. Burton?
Please refrain from asking undiplomatic questions, young man.
Well, what I meant was...
Yes, I know exactly what you meant. As I said earlier, I was being introduced to my country for the first time. Dada's idea. I'm sure he never had a Billy D. Burton in mind when he suggested that I see America.
Was there some sort of formal introduction made when you met?
No, none of that junk. I made it plain that I wanted to be taken to, entertained by, exposed to the lower classes. The lower, the better. I couldn't make myself believe that the lower classes were any better than the underclasses. All of them were purely American, in my opinion.
You were a snob, in other words. How did you see Billy D. Burton?
In my own country for the first time, and I was made aware of that class, the artistic elite, which is nourished by a bloodstream that does not depend on money or heritage for its position. I came, I looked, I heard, and I wanted two of them. Unfortunately, one was enough.
It was obvious that the lady was into something, dig it? What I mean is, you could look at her and tell she was out there. Anyway, a chick who could pop through boots as looking like a million stones and capable of holding a mug at the same time had to be out there. It was obvious that the lady dug Billy. Now, I don't mean like dug him physically. It was a genius art thing. She knew he was somewhere, and she wanted to take him to other places.
How could I stroll in, see genius at work, and simply walk out?
Billy D. Burton? Well, of course, professional ethics would prevent me from revealing the results of 7 years of psychoanalysis. But I can say this to you. Monsieur Burton was completely out of his mind. You understand? Très intelligent, but mad as a hatter.
Thank you.
view is straight uphill. But the path is full of pitfalls. 1,000 hours of psychoanalytic hair splitting would not be able to reveal why one goes straight to the top and another one falls into one pit after another.
Listen here now, Percy. Listen to this. 2 nights ago, in a large club in New York City, Billy D. Burton, brass tongue impresario of new feelings, flamenco sold Gabriel the real jazz, led us into new areas of sensitivity. We may not be privileged to be exposed to such emotionality again, ever. This is not written as a prophecy of doom, but rather as a delightful warning to our European friends, the current beneficiaries of Billy D. Burton's second continental tour.
Well, when Leo Leather likes you, he shows it.
You said it, kiddo. What could be better to start a tour off with? Where's Billy? I'd like for him to see this.
You're going to hate me for what I have to tell you.
Risk it. Where is he?
In New York.
We're on our way to a Billy D. Burton concert in one of London's largest music halls. Thousands are waiting to hear him, and Billy is in New York? How in the hell could he be in New York when he's supposed to be on this train?
Doris, please. It's a long...
Don't Doris me, you gutless puck. I gave you instructions to stay with him every single moment.
I did, Doris. I did.
Well, if you stayed with him every moment, you ought to be able to tell me where he is.
In New York.
New York?
Let me explain. He had to make a trip to the John just before we boarded in New York, and he gave me this note. But I didn't know what kind of note it was until we were preparing to take off.
What note? What did it say? Where is it?
It said, got a little unfinished business to take care of. See you in London.
Why didn't you tell me this before we boarded this train at Harwich? Why did you lie and tell me he was sleeping? Why? Percy, if Billy doesn't make it on time for this concert, I promise you, not a threat, you understand? A promise. I promise you that you will never work in Hollywood again. Do I make myself clear?
Crystal clear, Doris.
Now, what was this unfinished business about?
The usual, I would imagine.
Did we shoot all the dope?
No, not all. You want me to cook up the rest of this? If I do, we won't have a wake-up shot.
Who needs a wake-up? Who needs tomorrow? We got today, ain't that enough?
You're fantastic, Billy. Really fantastic. That's why I dig you.
Would you still dig me if I was just plain Joe Blow?
Hell no. Then you'd be nobody. And we wouldn't have this high-grade junk to shoot. And you wouldn't be Billy D. Burton. And I wouldn't gain any prestige from being with you or anything.
Okay, let's not get deep about things. Now, why don't we just shoot the dope and forget about everything else?
You like the idea of losing yourself, don't you?
It's all like my shrink.
Oh, I hate this junk. This garbage going through my veins.
I do, too.
Why do we do it?
Because we both are infantile idiots who are afraid to face our reality.
What's your reality?
My reality is being in front of a mob of Englishmen this evening. If my international watch is right.
Will you make it?
Who knows? Am I? My God, just might make it.
Now, look here, Doris. We had an agreement. We have almost 3,000 people out there clamoring to see and hear the inimitable Billy D. Burton. I can't tell them he isn't here.
I'm afraid you're going to have to, kiddo. The concert is now exactly an hour and a half old, and there's no sign of Billy D. Burton. And frankly, I don't think there will be. I think you ought to tell your customers that and refund their money.
But look here. You don't seem to understand. These people have come to hear Billy D. Burton and his horn. They may not want to leave should I announce that he isn't appearing this evening.
I know. I understand your position.
But why? Why?
I have been trying to answer that for the last 5 years. Come in, whatever it is.
I just got this. It's from Billy.
Let me see that. Sorry, couldn't finish unfinished business in time. Give my excuses. Love, Billy D. P.S. See you in Amsterdam on time.
How can he do this sort of thing?
Seems to be pretty easy for him.
Well, I shall, of course, demand a return of all advance monies and, in addition, begin breach of contract proceedings immediately.
The line forms to the left.
Hello? London would have given you the same reception.
Come on, Doris. Let's not go back through that again, okay?
I'm afraid we have to, kiddo, judging from the cancellations we've received.
Cancellations? What cancellations?
Well, the Cannes Jazz Festival is out for one, and we can forget about Moscow, Athens, and Budapest.
Okay, so they're canceled. What's left?
They still seem to be hungering for your body in Berlin, Warsaw, Stockholm, and Copenhagen.
It doesn't sound too bad to me.
Maybe it doesn't to you, but let me make you understand.
Oh, come on, Doris. No lectures, please. You sound like my mother when you go off on these little trips.
Okay, no lectures. Just a shot of truth, okay?
Okay. Okay, Raph, to be going, I'm listening.
No, you're not listening, Billy. You're spaced on dope. And what I'm saying probably makes no sense to you.
Yeah, yeah, Doris, I hear you. I still got my stuff together. Now, you know that. What time are we doing, Berlin?
10 o'clock.
Good. I hope they're ready for me.
What made you do it? What in the world possessed you to go on stage an hour late to begin with, and then insult those people by giving them a Hitler imitation and calling them all Nazis?
Did I do that?
You better believe you did it. I quote, "You people are just a bunch of Nazis. You always were and you always will be." Man, are you out of your mind?
You could be. Sometimes I want.
Oh, I've got a terrible headache. I'll talk to you later.
You gave a fantastic performance, Billy. Otherwise...
What do you mean, otherwise?
I'm talking about those two numbers you played before you went into the Hitler-Nazi thing.
I played, too?
Yeah. I'm sure they'll never forget you.
I'm sure. Listen, Percy, I want you to cop some dope for me when we get to Copenhagen. I'm fresh out and I'm beginning to be a little edgy.
Oh, sure, Billy, but you told Doris that...
Come on, off the soapbox. Forget that.
Okay, Billy. Okay.
Everything? Tickets, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, Doris, I got everything. Look, I'm sorry about the concert.
I'll keep it. Look, are you sure you don't want to fly? The boat will take a week.
Like I said, I just don't seem to be able to deal with flying this week.
Billy.
Yeah, Doris?
See your shrink as soon as you get in, okay?
I intend to, Doris. Yeah, I intend to. Here's Leo Leather's latest. Listen to this. Even to the diehard groups of masochists who have rationalized themselves into an acceptance of Billy D. Burden's infantile behavior, both on and off the stand, a bit of disillusionment seems to be seeping through the ranks. 3 evenings ago, fresh from an untriumphant European tour, Billy D. Burden alternately depressed and scandalized just such a group. In this day and age, to be able to use a word like scandalize is certainly indicative of how rotten things are in Denmark, which incidentally deported Billy D. Burden at the beginning of his non-tour. One wishes it possible to be able to give a more positive report on a performer who formerly offered us, with each performance, an earful of greatness and from time to time, a whisper of genius.
I think Leather's column says it all.
The hell it does. Now, where are we booked this weekend?
I have a skiing date.
Oh, come on, Doris. I know you've got enough clout to get me in somewhere.
You've killed yourself, Billy. Your record sales are uneven, meaning down. Your personal appearances have come to an end because you only seem to attract crazies when you finally do put in an appearance.
I'll reform.
Let's skip the pious stuff. I can only think of one place offhand that would give you a chance to appear on its stage.
Great, great. I'll take it.
It's close by.
Well, what kind of door are we talking about?
Very little. This is the Lodestar.
The Lodestar?
The Lodestar. Take it or leave it.
But what about Vegas and Reno, one of those Hollywood spots?
The Lodestar is one of the Hollywood spots. Take it or leave it.
What kind of money?
Like I said, very little.
And the Lodestar it is.
To present one of the 7 wonders of the entertainment world, Mr. Billy D. Burton. Welcome, Mr. Burton, for Lodestar.
I mean, this guy has enough bamboo flutes in a sack on his back to build a house, right? He's real excited looking for something. He stops a man who obviously looks like he's in the know. You know what I mean? With the long hair and all. Hey, buddy, how do I get to Carnegie Hall, he asks. Practice, baby, practice. The guy tells him. Hey, who's that jerk waving the bugle up there? Hey, get that jerk out of here. Gentlemen, I beg your indulgence.
Get that creep out of here.
You're lousy. You don't deserve it.
That's enough, Billy.
Out of here, Burton. And don't come back.
Right.
Don't call us. We'll call you.
Then what happened?
They booted me out. That's what happened. Kept my pay.
Why, when you talk, do you say the wrong thing?
I really do. Hey, Cookie.
Huh?
Why don't we get married?
Married? Me and you? Oh, I can see it now. Superstar horn player marries nobody.
Get the headlines, baby. I mean, really, everybody needs somebody, and I need you. I was totaling up the books the other night. And you know something?
No, what?
I reached the conclusion that you're the only woman I know who has stuck by me always.
Your manager is still in your corner.
I don't want to talk about her. I want to talk about us.
Come on, Billy boy. Skip the emotional trip. I got a pass that stretches around the corner, and it's filled with bums, creeps, you name it.
Cookie, maybe we could kick together. You know we have to sometime. You know that, don't you? There's even less a future for either of us, together or apart, shooting heroin.
Billy, I can tell that you're sincere. Let me think it over for a bit, okay?
Okay. Just remember, the third time round is always the easiest. Did we shoot the last of the dope?
I'm not going to stand for this. We've been married 3 months, and you haven't spent one night at home with me. Not one.
Well, business to be taken care of, sweetheart, and you know how it is.
Don't give me that. Your manager calls. I leave the messages to contact her. She calls me back wanting to know what happened. And all I can say is, I gave him the message. And you're going to try to tell me you're taking care of some kind of business?
Well, who are you to talk? What are you doing packing that?
I was feeding us, paying rent, keeping us supplied with dope, and trying to twist your head around straight. But now I'm leaving.
Cookie, you can't. Baby, you can't leave me.
Watch very carefully.
Oh, dear God. Oh, God.
Billy, I'm proud of you. I never thought you'd be able to pull it off.
Well, let's face it, Doris. I don't know if I have yet. Putting yourself into a drug rehab program for 6 months don't automatically reshape your skull.
Oh, come on. Why be so down on yourself? If you can kick a drug habit, you can fight all the rest of the demons. Now, how about joining me for a taste of my poison?
Scotch and soda?
Right on the money, kiddo. Right on the money. Now, let's have an understanding about this Tahoe gig. Nick Ross was and is an old fan of yours. He's willing to come close to top dollar for his room. With the option of holding you over if everything works out all right.
But don't worry. I'm on the right track.
Good. You've got 2 weeks to prepare for the first show.
2 weeks?
Well, you could take longer if you wanted to. But we felt the sooner you got back onto the track, the better.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Terrific. Now, the crucial part. The money isn't great, but the room has prestige. And it means you'll be given a hearing by you-know-who. Leo Leather says, quote, "Once again, Billy D. Burton failed to pull through his latest crisis. if he had offered us any indication that his recent stay in a drug rehabilitation unit had served any purpose, I think most of his audience would have offered goodwill with their tepid applause. Such an offer from Billy D. Burton was not forthcoming. Opening night. I was not able to attend the second show, nor was Billy D. Burton, according to my usual reliable sources. Oh, why, Billy? Why? Why anything? Why you didn't make the second show? Why you didn't make the first show on time the second night? Why don't you pull your act together?
My act is together.
Like hell it is.
I think you've received your share of the rewards.
No reward could ever compensate me for what I've had to go through with you. Bailing you out of one mess after another, trying to convince club owners and myself that you were stable enough to have a gig in their club, untangling your crazy money-making schemes.
Speaking of money...
Don't speak of it because you don't have any.
You mean I don't have any?
You heard me. You don't have any money. You've blown it all. Most of it in your veins. You are back on the stuff, aren't you?
Better know it.
Since when, Billy?
Since the day after I got out of the drug rehab program.
Mom, why are we going to a baby shower when it's snowing outside?
Because babies happen any time of the year, and Sears Baby Shop knows it. Because rain or shine, they have just about everything imaginable to give baby. A shower of gift choices like cribs, strollers, and high chairs, play suits, diapers, and sleepers, bibs and rattles, too, and all in one place. Sears is the way to find the right baby shower gift.
If I ever go to Sears Baby Shop, I'll bring my umbrella.
Sears Diehard Battery met the cold room test. We put a Diehard-equipped car in a special room at 0 degrees Fahrenheit and gradually dropped the temperature. 5 hours later, it was 20 below. 8 hours later, 30 below. After only 10.5 seconds, the car started. Test certified by United States Auto Club. The Sears Diehard, the battery that lives up to its name. Sold only at Sears.
Oh, let's see. I'll never party again. Oh, my head. Why did I vow to type my New Year resolutions? Please, Sears Corrector Typewriter, make this easy. Okay, first, I backspace to the incorrect letter. Tap the correction key to block out the mistake. Type the correct letter and proceed. All right. Sears Best Corrector Typewriter starts the New Year right. All items available at most larger Sears retail stores.
Again, and here's the concluding act of Billy D. Burton.
What did you say your name was?
You hard of hearing or something? Billy D. Burton.
What does the initial stand for?
Well, some people say the D is for damned. My mother says it's for Dylan.
Then you are the Billy D. Burton.
Yep, I am the Billy D. Burton. And I'm broke. And I'm applying for welfare, and you're a social worker, and you bought all my albums, and you're one of my greatest fans, right?
Well, oh, that happens to be true. But I'm beginning to feel a little nauseated from the way you make it sound.
I'm sorry, baby. I guess I'm feeling pretty negative about a lot of things these days.
Yes, I understand. Now then, you know you are eligible for a grant. We have a category for unmarried, poverty-stricken, single males.
That's me.
I'm pinching myself. I mean, well, you wouldn't understand. I mean, let's face it. You are Billy D. Brighton. How could you understand what that means?
Well, maybe I can't. Want to try me?
Maybe.
Well, forget about lunch. I can hardly afford meat.
You like boiled hot dogs? I only live a couple of blocks from here. Well, this is it. I've got a little rosé in the fridge, if you'd like something.
Nothing stronger?
Well, I'm a fresh out of all that cocaine and heroin. The rest of the stuff you're reputed to use.
You really know a lot about me, huh?
I wonder what I read in the papers. How would you like your hot dog? Medium rare, well done, or what?
Once around lightly.
Are you aware that we've known each other for almost 5 months?
No.
I wasn't aware.
And are you also aware that you've been drinking gin straight with your scrambled eggs and toast for the last 3 weeks?
No, is that so? I mean, so what?
Well, I mean, what are you planning to do other than drink gin every morning? And whatever it is that you do after I go to work.
Well, what is it you'd like to have me to do?
I don't know. I just don't know.
Good afternoon, Doris Dobson's agency.
This is Billy Burton. Let me speak to Doris.
One moment, please. Billy?
Yeah, this is Billy. What's happening, Doris?
Oh, you know, same old number. What's happening with you?
Nothing. Why do you think I called?
I have no idea why you called, and I'm not particularly interested.
What does that mean?
You figure it out. Look, I'm a little busy right now. What was it you wanted?
I need a gig, Doris. I need to work. I'm falling apart.
I can't help you, Billy.
Oh, come on, Doris. You've always got an ace up your sleeve somewhere.
Everybody's booked.
Sounds like you're trying to tell me something, Doris.
Are you listening?
Yeah.
Goodbye, Billy, and good luck.
Oh, so that's the way the world is.
Go on, Billy. Play some jazz for you. Play for it, Billy. Yeah.
But I ain't got no horn. That's got you get. Them less got you. I hate that song. I've always hated that song. Shut up! Shut up!
Billy? Billy? Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah.
I'm getting you out of here.
Why? Out. You don't think I fit?
Let's knock off the tough guy stuff, kiddo. This is serious material we're dealing with.
Who are you trying to convince?
They banged you up pretty bad, huh?
Not really. Just the sort of thing a bunch of wild and crazy guys would do to you.
Billy, I wish there was some way I could make you take yourself seriously.
You can.
Joking again, huh?
No joking this time. Get me out of here before I go crazy for real. Now get me out of here. I'll take myself seriously.
It's already been taken care of. How could I possibly know that you were in a place like this and not come to the rescue?
I didn't know you cared about me.
Don't be dumb, Billy. I've always cared about you.
You know what I mean.
Yes, I know what you mean.
Well, what are we going to do about it?
Nothing now. The first thing for you to think about is getting out of this place.
When?
Everything is being greased, and it'll take about a month for the pieces to slide together.
I skip all the jive, Doris. When will they unstrap my arms and let me out of this crazy house?
It has to be within a month. Or else you won't be able to appear at the Tribute to Billy D. Burton concert.
What are you talking about?
A memorial concert for you.
Well, I thought you had to be dead before they pull one of those cards out for you.
Well, let's face it. A lot of people do think you're dead.
I guess the concert would tell them that I'm not dead, huh?
I don't think it would hurt. In addition, it would be the opening round of a machine gun blast that I've prepared for the world. Billy D. Burton returns.
I've never been gone.
Yes, you have, kiddo. And I think the world at large would be very interested in your return.
I like this. I really do. Imagine coming out of a crazy house to blow people's minds. I'll never be the same.
Let's hope so.
It was truly a heavy scene. Heavy. Billy D. Burton, erratic great of the jazz horn, had gotten on a train somewhere in upstate Pennsylvania, smoothed out of a drug and personal problems, returning home to star in a memorial concert to himself.
That requires ego, of which Billy has not been noted to have any lack. We sat and waited anxiously at first, trading hip, fly little remarks at each other, dealing with Billy's return to the scene. His hassle in the madhouse, the thousand and one odd things we knew about him. The curtains shimmered, the cloth responding to the glittering anxiety seated before it. A pale rush of hot air being involuntarily exhaled toward the stage created the kind of feeling that made one feel as though one were present at the beginning gust of a hurricane. But Billy didn't show. The far-out people will talk about it for the rest of their lives. They'll pass it along to their children. The night Billy D. Burton didn't show up for his own birthday party, in a manner of speaking. For some of us, the reason will be more clearly drawn. A professional failed to do his job, and we are beyond dealing with him on any other level. It looked good for a while, the effort being made to do the right thing, the commitment that is necessary to any craft, even one touched by magic. A little bit like reading your own obituary, huh?
He had been visiting for a couple of weeks before he died here. It was an unbelievable sort of spiritual happening. He was on the verge of finding himself in his music. You could tell from the level of maturity that was announced in his playing. It was as though all of his suffering and frustration had channeled themselves into a core, something that made him less susceptible to criticism. He had been very disturbed by the Leo Leather column, in a way I'd never known him to be, in some distorted way. He seemed to feel that he was a folk hero of some sort who was letting his side down. He was, in a sense, in training here when the attack came. His playing had reached that level of quality that the Spanish speak about when they say someone has duende. There is no literal translation for the word. It's beyond being merely soulful. Billy was there when the end came. He played before he died a few things he was working on. I remember the ending of one of his arias in brass. It seemed to sum up his whole life.
Theater has been brought to you by Sears Roebuck and Company, where our policy is satisfaction guaranteed or your money back. Sears, where America shops for value. Billy D. Burton was written by Odie Hawkins, produced and directed by Fletcher Markle. Your hostess was Cicely Tyson. Our stars were Robert Dokey and Robin Braxton. Featured in the cast were Helen Martin, Stephen Markle, Byron Kane, Joan McCall, Ben Wright, Peggy Weber, and Jim Mapp. The music for Sears Radio Theater was composed and conducted by Nelson Riddle. This is Art Gilmore speaking. The Elliott Lewis production of Sears Radio Theater is a presentation of CBI.
CBS News, the United States and 42 other countries have asked for an urgent meeting of the UN Security Council to discuss the Russian invasion of Afghanistan. This is Doug Poling reporting on the CBS radio network. The request asked the council to consider what was termed the situation in Afghanistan and its implications for international peace and security. A debate is expected to get underway tomorrow night or Saturday. The Russians can veto any Security Council resolution that might be offered in connection with the crisis, but delegates favoring the meeting said an open discussion would have its impact on world public opinion and hopefully cause the Soviets to moderate their actions.
Malcolm Toon, the former U.S. ambassador to the Soviet Union, said tonight American diplomats in Moscow foresaw the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan several months ago. Toon said the pro-Soviet government of Afghanistan was slipping, and it was fairly obvious the Russians would maintain their position by force. President Carter today asked the Senate to set aside the SALT II treaty because of the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan. The Senate leadership quickly agreed. The administration also indicated it may take a number of other actions, including possible arms sales to Pakistan, which borders Afghanistan. A number of leading senators, including Democrat Henry Jackson of Washington, said the Russians may have felt they had nothing to lose as far as the SALT Pact is concerned.
I think the Russians were smart enough to know, because they had about 200 lobbyists from the embassy all over Capitol Hill, that SALT wasn't going to pass anyway. So with Afghanistan as a great target of opportunity, they didn't hesitate to undertake a program of naked aggression.
The Russians have sharply criticized the Carter administration for putting the SALT treaty on the back burner. Comment on that subject came from TASS, the Soviet news agency. Mike Lee has a report from Moscow.
TASS says, quote, as a pretext for this postponement, the president chose granting by the Soviet Union of military aid to Afghanistan in response to repeated requests from the Afghan government. The official news agency went on to say, quote, the American administration and reactionary quarters in the United States interested in spiraling the nuclear arms race have already long been working to procrastinate ratification of the SALT II treaty. TASS had earlier today attacked the Carter administration for what the news agency called hypocrisy and lies about Soviet policy in Afghanistan, and characterized President Carter himself as being bellicose and wicked in public statements about the Afghan crisis. Mike Lee, CBS News, Moscow.
The government is going to relax its opposition to the controversial cancer drug Laetril. The Food and Drug Administration will allow the National Cancer Institute to make the first clinical trial of Laetril on humans. The test period will be for 1 year and will involve 200 to 300 advanced cancer patients who volunteer for Laetril treatment. Canadian locals of the Auto Workers Union today refused to make further concessions to help save the Chrysler Corporation. There are fears this could upset the UAW's efforts to win ratification of a new contract in the United States. New wage concessions were mandated under terms of the $3.5 billion aid package for Chrysler approved by Congress. Former Black Panther leader Eldridge Cleaver was placed on probation today and ordered to perform 2,000 hours of community service. The ruling was handed down by a judge in Oakland, California, as a penalty for Cleaver's allegedly assaulting police in a shootout in 1968. Cleaver, now 44 years old, became a born-again Christian and is active in religious work. The judge said he did not sentence Cleaver to prison because he believes he has changed for the better and has rehabilitated himself. This is Doug Poling, CBS News.